This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
Welcome to SFF, yeah, a podcast dedicated to all things science fiction and fantasy. This is episode 167, and we are recording on December 22nd. I'm Jen Northington. I'm here with Vanessa Diaz again, filling in for Sharifa. Hooray.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Thank you. Jen and I are getting to spend some quality podcasting time together lately.
We are. I'm not sad about it. Yes, so today we're going to talk about what 2022 and 2023 titles got accolades in this past year. 2022 is because all of the award winners for this year were published in 2022, because that's how awards work, right? Like, the books have to be out before you can award them. So, but then the 2023 books were the ones that appeared on, like, best of the year list. So we'll be looking at award winners and then best of the year roundups. And I did a bunch of data crunching because, of course, I did.
It's what you do so well. That's why we love
it. It's what I do. It's what I do. I make spreadsheets about things. Okay. So before we get into everything else, though, a little housekeeping note. I said on this most recent episode of Backlist, but if you haven't listened yet, I'm going to be playing with it since it's just me for the next 3 months over there. And one of the things I was like, let's do this, is bringing back a little of that Get Booked vibes. So if you would like a personalized SFF reading recommendation from moi, email sffyeah@bookriot.com. Tell me what you like, what you're looking for, what you've already read in that vibe. And we already got our first question. So that's super fun. Yeah, I was like, oh, why didn't I think of this sooner?
May I tell the readers a silly little Get Booked anecdote about
me?
When I was just a Book Riot fan, I wrote in to Get Booked to get recommendations for a trip I was taking to England, books about England. So it was you and Amanda that suggested a bunch of books that introduced me to Zadie Smith. It's been great. But it was literally that trip that sort of got me to go, I don't want to do the job I'm doing, and I want to work in books and writing. It was like the kickoff for like a whole big life change that eventually landed me here. So Get Booked is out here changing lives.
Oh my goodness. I cannot. That's amazing. Wow.
Many moons
well,
ago.
I cannot promise y'all that your recommendation will change your life or career path.
It'll give you something to read.
It will definitely give you some options for reading. All right, let's see. Other housekeeping. Oris, it is the holiday season. I don't know if you noticed. Maybe you noticed. It's definitely the holiday season. And TBR is here to help you with all of your last-minute gifting needs. You can give it basically immediately. Like, they have to fill out the survey, because it's personalized reading recommendations from our bibliologists. And then we ship the books to them after they've done that. So you can give it immediately. You don't have to wait for shipping. And we have paperbacks. We have recs only. We have hardcovers. Lots of different budget options. So go to mytbr.co. That's mytbr.co. And check it out. We are here to help you with your bookish gifting. All right. We're going to take a sponsor break. And then we're going to talk about some best of lists.
Today's episode is brought to you by Harper Horizon, publisher of Walk, Ride, Paddle. Walk, Ride, Paddle is a captivating memoir of Senator Tim Kaine's physical journey through the Virginia wilderness, but it is also a unique and ultimately optimistic perspective on these pivotal moments in history, offering inspiration, wisdom, and hope. With immediacy and honesty, Kaine pulls back the curtain to reveal his inner thoughts during such monumental times. And Kaine's storytelling gift and wise observations offer a fascinating glimpse into the mind of a seasoned politician and outdoor enthusiast. Walk, Ride, Paddle is available everywhere audiobooks are sold on April 9th. It is narrated and written by Tim Kaine, Virginia senator and former Democratic vice presidential candidate. It's a compelling account of one man's journey across hundreds of miles of Virginia wilderness and a moving testament to the optimistic spirit of America. So make sure to check out Walk, Ride, Paddle by Tim Kaine. And thanks again to Harper Horizon, publisher of Walk, Ride, Paddle, for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Bloom Books. Charming, easygoing, and rich, Xavier Castillo has the world at his fingertips. He also has no interest in taking over his family's empire, but that hasn't stopped women from throwing themselves at him. Unless, of course, the woman in question is his publicist. The cool, the intelligent, the ambitious Sloane Kensington, who is a high-powered publicist who's used to dealing with difficult clients, but none infuriate or tempt her more than a certain billionaire heir with his stupid dimples and laid-back attitude. She may be forced to work with him, but she'll never fall for him because he's a client and that's all he'll ever be, right? Right, girl, like we all know. So just in case you didn't know, author Anna Wong is the best-selling author and book talk viral author of the Twisted Love series, the King of Sin series. Miss Wong, gotta go on, okay? Make sure to check out King of Sloth by Anna Wong. And thanks again to Bloom Books for sponsoring this episode.
So Vanessa.
Jen.
I was like half surprised about what the top titles ended up being. Like, I don't think anybody is surprised that Chain Gang All-Stars showed up on seven different best of 2023 lists, right?
No, not at all. I would say I was mostly not surprised. I was like a teeny surprised that like the Lone Women title made it on there, which is actually one of my books I'm going to talk about today. But yeah, I feel like Chain Gang All-Stars is a book that you just could not avoid if you tried. It was just everywhere. And I mean, and with good reason. It's apparently the first chapter I have read is great. I just haven't gotten further. But yeah, like I'm surprised to see that I've actually read some of the books on this list, because I'm usually really, really bad at this for reasons that have to do with, you know, reading frontlist titles on a podcast where I have to read for a specific day, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. So I decided not to look at this list until last night to kind of get surprised by it. I was like, ooh, fun.
I love that.
What are your thoughts?
Yeah. So, well, I guess I should explain my methodology a little bit, which was loose. Let's be real here. I am not a scientific. I kept track of as many best of lists as I could. I like saved URLs, and then I went and I grabbed a bunch of the titles on them and tried to filter for just the sci-fi fantasy, because some of these were best of SFF lists and some of them weren't, just general, like everything that came out this year, which are our favorites from different, you know, publications and outlets. And then, you know, made some formulas in Google Sheets and came up with the ones that were repeated the most often. And so Chain Gang All-Stars by Nana Kwame Adjei-Brenya was at the very top the whole time. Like, I kept like updating it, you know, as more of these would come in, and it was never not at the top. Like, still Chain there. Gang All-Stars was still there. It's always at the top, which is legit. I mean, that book is the real stuff. And it is also quite a lot. So, like, I was about halfway through when I was like, I am a little too delicate right now for this book.
That's but basically like, what I haven't gotten further.
Yeah. What I did read like blew my mind. It just great. Got really heavy in the middle, and I was like, I need to take a breath. But I'm going back to it, and Adjei-Brenya is such a stylist. Like the writing style is just like, mwah, chef's kiss. If you are behind on that, it's okay. It's here for you when you're ready. But it is a real good book. Let's see. And then the next one I actually have not read yet, or even am close to reading. It's Land of Milk and Honey by C. Pam Zhang. And that was number 6. And that's like a post-apocalypse kind of story.
Yeah.
Have you read that one?
No, it's my brain was in a deep not place of apocalypse for a bit there, and I feel like I'm coming back around to it. So yeah, for some of the reasons, but it's a beautiful cover. I own it.
So gorgeous. Yes. I've heard such good things about Zhang's other book that came out like what, a couple years ago? Everybody was real hype about. It was like a Western historical fiction jobby. So super interested in getting that one to the top of my TBR. I am back in the place where I can read hard things, so I have a lot of catching up to do.
Same, extremely.
This
same.
Next one, though, I know you read.
I have. Well, okay, I read part of it because I'm a weenie. I've gotten to a place as well. To be clear, where like this is the year that I finally started reaching for more difficult topics again, and I really wanted to read Our Share of Night by Mariana Enriquez. the thing about Latin American horror, which I love, right, like the hallmark of it, is that it very much just takes like the literal everyday atrocities that happen in those countries and just like blows them up into like these proportions that really don't need even that much blowing up, but really kind of leads into like the dark parts of humanity. And I got part of the way through and like kind of chickened out. Same thing with like her last book, but it's so good. Like I'm going to keep going. And I almost put it on my list of favorites for this year because of what I did read. But I backed up a little bit because I need to go further. Also a stunning cover. It's just, it's heavy. And there was, as you just said, there were some months where heavy was not on the menu.
Yeah. It was, it's been real out here in this world. And that impacts our reading because of course it does. Like it can't not. So, okay. So Our Share of Night had 5 mentions. And then Lone Women by Victor Laval, late but great, made it on at 3. And then everything else was tied at 2. And it was way too many books for me to like include here. So, but I know I read and loved Lone Women. You're going to talk about it. Yes. Always a Laval fan. Like Sharif and I did a whole book club about that, about that book.
But the book, right? Yeah.
So, exactly. Yeah, we sure did. And I was delighted to see that these are all by, you know, BIPOC or non-white authors, which makes me really happy to see like the love getting shared. It doesn't always look like that. So this is a nice, it was a good year for books, y'all. It was a real good year
SFF. I'm really glad I ended up doing this episode because it's easy to forget, I guess, what you've read. And, you know, again, we do books for a living. So they're kind of coming at you a mile a minute. And then, sitting here and actually looking at these stats of the books that came out and that were, you know, getting mentioned, I was like, oh, it was a good year for books. it was good. Like I read some really good stuff. And other people read really good stuff.
Yes. It was nice to see. And a bunch of these lists actually that were not, you know, SFF focused. I guess that is one thing about these 4 books is that they are sort of genre blenders, right? Like they're edge casey, or they straddle a couple of genres, which I think is really cool. Also, I love to see that. So I have no notes.
I have no notes, but I do have a theme, which is that it very much seems like a lot of the SFF people were putting on lists very much bled into horror. They have horror elements, and again, I think that says something about where we all are collectively. I don't say that as a bad thing at all because a lot of my picks have horror elements, but I'm like, interesting. We're all like, make it weird and make it scary.
Yeah, we are all going through some stuff. It turns out.
Turns out.
All right, so those are the top titles from the 2023 Best of list. These will all be in the show notes for you, of course. This was really interesting, too. The top titles from books that were published in 2022 but won awards in 2023. I was not expecting the very tippity top. And these, okay, so I will say these were not necessarily award winners. These were award finalists or winners. I looked at the full, I will update that so that's clear in the show notes. These are award finalists and winners. So some of them were nominated and didn't win. Some of them did win, but there were a lot of repeats, like a lot of repeats on what was nominated and or won. So I have 9 titles here, but the winner, Chicken Dinner, was Even Though I Knew the End by C.L. Polk, with 6 nominations and or wins for 2023 awards. Which I was like, dang, that's awesome.
Awesome. For their slimmest title yet.
Exactly. Really cool. Like, that's a novella, like, not,
very
you know.
Noir. I don't know. Like,
Yeah. Again, a genre bendy one, right? It's not, like, pure fantasy or sci-fi. Yep. So that was super. And I really didn't think anything was going to beat Babel.
I did
by
not.
R.F. Kuang.
I did not. But I would have lost that bet.
But Even Though I Knew the End did beat it out by 1.
Look at you.
I just am amazed. So Babel, obviously, like that, you know, that was always going to be at the top of a list of big books from 2022 that got noticed in 2023. I read it. It was rough. It was great, which is basically how those books go, right? Like that's her specialty. It's really rough, really good. Did you read that one yet?
No, I also have it because obviously all the like Oxford and linguistics stuff like really got me. And then I remembered, I'm like, wait, you also wrote the, oh my gosh, I'm of course blanking on the series
Poppy
name
right
now. Poppy Wars. Yeah, and I was like, I know what you're capable of. I need more time.
Let me tell you, when I say that the ending, I was actually hanging out with Sharifa when I finished that book.
Oh.
And I was like, I just have to stare at this wall.
I need therapy.
Like, I need therapy. It was a lot.
Woo! Yeah, I definitely read Yellowface this year to be like, don't worry, I'm reading you, which not that RF1 cares at all what I'm doing with my life. But I was like, I want to get to Babel, but I wasn't. I think I tried reading Poppy Wars and I asked you about it. And you were like, you can't do this.
You can't do it. It's too much. Like, okay. She's one of those authors where I will go there, you know, but it's like Victor Lavalle too. I'm like, you're going to destroy me, but I'm going to go. But it's like, whew, that's a lot. Yeah. So let's see. Oh, then Spear by Nicola Griffith. Yes. Which I adore.
Me too.
Adore. Came in with 4 nominations or wins. And that's another novella, Arthurian queer, you know, retelling of Percival. Amazing. So like, amazing. So good. So, so good.
I was listening to the audiobook of Spear on a walk, like on this really gorgeous, like, walk hike, and there was a body of water, and I was so, into the book that I slipped, and I fell in the little river, but I had my phone in my hand, so I lifted my hand up in the air, and Spear just, like, kept on playing while I was in this body of water with, like, my hand poking out of the water, like, Victoria. I probably looked absolutely bananas for anybody walking by. It's like Spear by Nicola Griffith, great book. So that's my story.
I love that story. That's fantastic.
It's great. Good times.
Oh my goodness, that's so funny. Well, you know, save the book.
Save the book.
Right? Like that save the book. You saved the book. You did the thing. So we have a 6-way tie for 4th place. All of these books got 3 nominations or wins each. Ooh. And I'm not particularly surprised, honestly, by any of them here. Bloodmarked by Tracy Dion from the amazing series that she's doing. Speaking of Arthurian, right?
I've only read the first book,
Yeah. So Bloodmarked is the sequel. Love to see it. Daughter of Dr. Moreau by Sylvia Moreno-Garcia. Loved. It was so good.
So good.
And also kind of horror-y.
Yeah, there were definitely some...
Historical horror.
Yes. I'm telling you, it's very much a theme for me in
books
lately.
You're right. It's a thing.
That one was fantastic.
On the non-horrifying end of things, Enter the Riverlands by Nevo. Oh, who was the only repeat author? Siren Queen also made it onto these lists. So both of which I read, both of which were like fantastic. Oof. I mean, just... Siren Queen is dark. Into the Riverlands is not. So if you need a break from the darkness, highly recommend that one. And then Ogres by Adrian Tchaikovsky, which is a novella. And Sea of Tranquility by Emily St. John Mandel, which is another Edge Casey one.
Yep.
Yeah.
What is time? Half of these, I'm like,
what was last time?
Year? Like, yeah.
I know. Yeah. I was really surprised by Sea of Tranquility. I was like, that book has surely been out for like 5 years.
I thought
right?
for sure at least 2, but apparently I was wrong.
It kept coming up on this list. So I was like, well, all right.
Great.
Here we are.
That's a lot of ties.
Yeah, it's a lot of ties. It was interesting, actually. There was a lot of, I mean, you know, there are sort of the usual suspects that get a lot of the nominations or the love in any given year. But I guess what I like about this is that there are, I mean, it does lean more speculative or fantasy than sci-fi,
yeah,
certainly.
I would say.
But there's a nice variety, even... regardless, you know, some of this is contemporary, some of this is historical, some of this is, you know, there it's like a little bit all over the
Lots
place.
Of
some of it
flavors,
is really literary, some of it is more commercial, like it's you know, some of it is YA, like it's really
very diverse.
Really ranges.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's super diverse in a lot of different ways, which I think is really cool. So it's just nice, you know, in a year that like things were not great in a lot of ways, to see books that I'm like, oh yeah, these are great books.
Oh yeah. I love that. That's the same measure. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah. These are good. These are great. So yeah, that's my non-scientific research that I have done. I wrote it all up in a post on BookWrite. I'll link to that too. So you can see a little bit more in detail what that looks like. But yeah, it's always fun to do this. I really enjoy it because I'm always just like, yeah, what's it gonna be this year? Like what are my surprise books gonna be?
Yeah, I'll be very surprised if like Our Share of Night and Jane Gang All Stars don't take a lot of these top spots next year.
100% like, next year. Yeah, surprised. It's a good point, actually. We could do a fun, like, what were the overlaps between this year's best of list and next year's award winners list. Note to future Jen.
Note to the data person.
Do that. Do that, do that thing. All right. It's on my list. Great. On my mental list.
Happy to help.
All right. So we're going to take another sponsor break, and then we will come back with some of our favorites from 2023.
This episode is sponsored by The One That Got Away with Murder by Trish Lundy. Robbie and Trevor Cressmont have enough wealth to ensure they'll never be found guilty of any wrongdoing, even if everyone believes they're behind the deaths of their ex-girlfriends. Let us all take a collective angry sigh at that. Lauren O'Brien, the new girl at school, has a dark past of her own, and she's desperate for a fresh start. Except when she starts a relationship with Robbie, her chance is put in jeopardy. During what's meant to be their last weekend together, Lauren stumbles across evidence that might just implicate Robbie. And after a third death rocks the town, she must decide whether to end things with Robbie or risk becoming another cautionary tale. This is an edge-of-your-seat YA thriller that's perfect for fans of Karen McManus and Holly Jackson. Make sure you pick that up now wherever books are sold. And thank you once again to The One That Got Away with Murder by Trish Lundy for sponsoring today's show.
Today's episode is brought to you by Flatiron Books, publisher of The Familiar by Leigh Bardugo. This is one I'm actually super excited about. I liked Leigh Bardugo's other adult fantasy books, and so I'm really looking forward to this one. It's set in the Spanish Golden Age during a time of high-stakes political intrigue and glittering wealth. It follows Luzia, a servant in the household of an impoverished Spanish nobleman who reveals a talent for little miracles. Her social-climbing mistress demands Luzia use her gifts to win over Madrid's most powerful players, but what begins as simple amusement takes a dangerous turn. Luzia will need to use every bit of her wit and will to survive, even the help of Guillén Santángel, an immortal familiar whose own secrets could prove deadly for them both. So The Familiar by Leigh Bardugo is on sale now. And like I said, it's a must-read of the season. It's perfect for anyone who loves history, a little bit of magic, a lot of danger. You can get your copy now at LeighBardugoTheFamiliar.com. And thanks again to Flatiron Books, publisher of The Familiar by Leigh Bardugo, for sponsoring this episode.
Vanessa, why don't you go first? I've been talking a lot.
Jen is letting me go first because her first pick led me to scream profanities at her for picking it before me. So she's trying to give me a gimme right now. That's fine because whatever. At least it means more people get to hear about it. So looking at my list, I definitely leaned a lot into, I think, stuff that's very like edge case or just like genre blendy a lot. So my first pick is one of the spec nature, and that's Vampires of El Norte by Isabel Cañas. Which I don't know how many Mexican people listen to this podcast, but I have mistakenly been calling this book Vampiros del Norte for a year. Like only when I went to write it out, which basically means that I was turning it into like a regional Mexican band, because there's a lot of groups that actually sound like that. Like the Tigres del Norte, like the Canes de Tijuana. And I'm over here like Los Vampiros del Norte. No, it's not. It's the Vampires. I literally had to go correct it in a post because I wrote it wrong. But somehow, anyway, so here we are. Y'all have heard about this book, but, you know, it takes place in 1840s Mexico at the Texas-Mexico border, where this strange disease known as el susto, or a fright, which is a thing that Mexican mothers definitely will warn you against. Like, oh, don't go out at night because you might suffer a fright. But it leaves people mysteriously drained of blood. So I love this book because vampires, because of the exploration of, like, what makes someone or something a monster, because of course the like invading Anglos in this book are every bit as scary a threat as whatever it is that goes bump in the night. And I love that Isabel Cañas really leans into the use of Spanish in her books in a way that just feels very natural and not forced. I mean, she is Mexican-American, but to this day, when I read books that have Spanish, it sometimes feels like they're trying to make Spanglish happen in a way that doesn't actually make sense. Obviously, this is historical, so that really wouldn't make sense to like do it in that way. But yeah, I just love that it's seamless. And obviously, if you don't understand Spanish, you might have to look a few things up, but that's great.
That's fine. No, not that.
And I loved it for that. And yeah, just that exploration of that, like, yeah, like Mexican urban legend, yeah, that maybe people haven't considered before. So it's so much fun. I was really glad I got to read this one kind of at the last second. And I now know the real name of the book, which is nice.
Excellent. Yes. You've caught up.
So yeah, that's my first pick.
That one has been on my list all year, and I just never quite got to it. And I hope to rectify that in next year because it's so I know I'm going to love it. I just know. It's all of the things I like. So I just need to get to it.
It's also like a little bit of a semi-romancy angle. And, well, there is not it's a romance angle. Yeah, so good. It's if you like La Hacienda, which was, you know, her first book, like this is definitely different. Right. But in if you like, she puts the things that you may have liked from that in this too. So good pick.
Right. Excellent. Excellent.
Now you go.
All right. So yes, my speculative pick that I got to before Vanessa, very deliberately,
I'm sure you did,
is The Last Tale of the Flower Bride by Roshani Chokshi. I mean, listen, Chokshi is an amazing writer. This is her debut adult novel. Yeah. She's written a lot of YA, and she's written some, you know, adult short stories. Adult short stories. That sounds weird. She's written some short stories in adult collections. I don't know how to say that word. It doesn't sound weird. You know what I mean. But this is her first novel that's targeted towards adult readers, and it is... Whew, it's, I mean, yeah, it's dark, it is sexy, it is gothic AF while still being contemporary AF. Like, it's a really fascinating mix of things. And I think what I love most about it is how Chokshi fully leans into the fairy tale storytelling style.
Yes.
Like, this is, you know, the story of two girls who grow up in very different circumstances but become best friends despite that in, you know, modern times. But it you feel like you are in a fairy tale the whole time. And we've got two timelines. We get a future and a past, or present and a past, technically, timeline for this. And it's just stunning how, I mean, honestly, for me, like, I hesitate to say this ever because somebody's out here did not like this book, and that's fine. But, like, for me, this was, like, a perfect book. Yeah, like, I can't think of any quibble I have with it, honestly.
Nope. You'll get me with anything gothic, but yeah, I was listening to this one and reading it, like, at the same, like, depending on where I was, because I needed to keep going at it. And it's just, yeah, it keeps you very, very engaged because of that. It feels like someone's telling you a fairy tale, like,
right?
Yeah, it just had such a the overall vibes. I feel like that word gets overused now, but the vibe was just so impeccable on this book. It was
I love her. Yeah, impeccable prose, impeccable vibes. I mean, this book, I was really bummed actually that it didn't make the best
lists. Yeah,
that's I was like, I was expecting it to show up somewhere on there, and it might have had some twosies, but like, it didn't crack the top, you know. And I was like, justice for Last Tale of a Flower Bride. Like, this book is amazing.
Yeah, it is.
So, yeah, highly recommend if you have not picked it up yet. I loved that book.
Fantastic. Well, I will tell us about my next pick, which is my science fiction pick. So it's funny, I signed up for this podcast. Like, we're filling in for Sharifa, and we're all kind of filling in different episodes just based on what works. And I was like, oh my gosh, I read so much SFF this year. Like, let me do it. Lies. I read a lot of fantasy and spec this year. I did not read very much actual science fiction this year, which I noticed when I sat down to do this. I was like, I should read a book. So I was very recently on this very show talking about Anne Leckie and how I hadn't read any of her other work, and I decided to go back and read a book that she released this year, which is Translation State. And I will confess, I'm actually like 90% done with it, but I'm still putting it on here because this book is just breaking my brain in a really great way. So it is a standalone, but it is set in the world of her Ancillary Justice series, and which I have not read. And I think it probably would have helped maybe get me a little further in recognizing some names, but I still felt like it was fine. It's a space opera where, you know, three kind of distinct lives collide in search for an alien translator who has been lost for centuries. And this book is so, which is a thing that Lackey does a lot, right? But a lot about language, about power dynamics, and a lot about gender identity and like getting agency over your personhood. And I will admit, this has a lot, which, I mean, this is science fiction, that's fine, but like, so there is so much language stuff that I started this one on audio because it is read by the like indomitable, just incomparable Adjoa Ando, who also read The Raven Tower, who's done so much work with her career, but you may know most recently is Lady Danbury from Bridgerton. Just like this buttery, smooth, like excellent delivery, and does a really good job because this book plays with pronouns in a way that you really have to kind of listen for, because they're not, I think it's like sil and ser, not like, you know, they and their. So anyway, there's a lot of concentration that had to happen with this book. I did have to switch to print for a bit because of that. But anything that plays with language in this way is going to be a catnip thing for me. And I'm very, very, very positive that, you know, this last like 10% is still going to land this book on a best of for me. So yeah, that's Translation State by Anne Leckie.
That's good to hear. I have, again, a book I did not get to, but I've, you know, been reading Leckie for many a year now and enjoying the experience. So it's high on my list.
That's great.
Awesome. So I did read a bunch of sci-fi this year. So I have two sci-fi picks. The first is The Deep Sky by Yume Katase. Listen, y'all, I know you've heard me and Sharifa both now talk about this book, so I'm not going to re-summarize it for you, except for to say that it is like a whodunit on a spaceship that also might still blow up, like we might all die, and we're trying to save humanity, and a bunch of us are pregnant. Like, wow, the stakes could not be higher. Like, literally could not be higher. Actually, it's interesting. I didn't think about this. This one also has a present and then past timeline. You see these characters as adults, and then you see them as teenagers, just like Last Tale of the Flower Bride. Apparently, I'm a sucker for that. It was so well done because, you know, you have these people who have been in, you know, a really intensive training program in competition and also in collaboration with each other for years. And so things get messy and complicated. Like, feelings get messy and complicated. Relationships get messy and complicated. Also, you're like in space trying to, like, you know, spread humanity to the stars. Like, what could not go wrong, quite frankly? Like, what could not go wrong? And it's just, it's so well done. These characters, you alternately want to like shake them and hug them and be like, what are you doing? Like, please don't do that thing. And it's all so, so good. So I feel like this is the book that I've been sort of waiting for, honestly. Like, the things that Katase does with this trope that's like, you know, it's a trope. Like, we've seen this played out before. I love it every time. But I feel like she makes it, you know, thoroughly her own. And it was absolutely one of my favorite sci-fi books of the year. So again, Deep Sky by Yume Katase. Do not read if you are sensitive to pregnancy and child complications. Don't do it.
The way that ended, complications.
Yeah, yeah, I don't know. It's like hard to say, but don't read it if that's going to bug you.
Totally. I think we get what you're putting down, so appreciate that.
Yeah.
I've been meaning to read that one for a while. I need to write that down.
So good.
Yes. Okay. I'll save that one for later. So yeah, I already kind of teased this at the top of the show, but my pick that I don't even know what to classify this as, but I looked all over the place to see what other people were doing. And yeah, it's like fantasy, but historical, but very horror, so many things. And that's Lone Women by Victor Laval, which I think you've also talked, obviously, you know, between the book club and other, like, your people know what this is about by now. But it's just, you know, 1950, like, I love a historical, I love a, like, woman setting off on her own, and then you make it horrifying in this what's in the box way, and I was like, what's in the box? What? this is so, so good. I also did this one on audio and then went back to read parts of it in print. I was like, no, there's no way I understood that correctly. No, I did. I did, in fact, understand it correctly. I was just like, oh, okay, that's where we're going with this. Laval is really great at horror period and then spec fic, but in this book really dives into those like isolation feelings and what division across race looks like when those especially like well-meaning white people in the story, like not so much. Like, and how racism is very often that sort of thing where like the veneer of it is like, no, everybody here is friendly and accepting until the family dynamic and like what community means, especially among like marginalized folks, and then again what's in the box. Like, and who, what, etc. The box contents are was like, oh, okay. And that was the part that I went back and reread to make sure I understood it. And no, I did. It was just awful. I just, Victor Lavalle had me at Changeling and Ballad of Black Tom. So like, I always knew I was going to read this, but I am typically not a person who goes for stuff that's Western. Like, it's not that I don't like it. It just maybe isn't the thing I reach for often. I think I need to change that because this was a lot of fun. That whole like frontier, what the heck is out there, possibility, but only for the people who we think deserve it thing is something I would like to spend more time with. So, and it made me sing Wide Open Spaces by Dixie Chicks a lot, which is really weird because the book is like, again, horror. And I was like, what? Yeah, so that's my story. But yeah, read this book. It's really good. Lone Women.
It's really good. Yeah. Read it and then listen to our book club episode about it. It's great. It's, I mean, it's a lot though. I mean, I it's funny, that book left me with so many complicated feelings about like, what do I think about some of these people? Like, I don't know.
No, absolutely.
And he does not answer those questions for you. So you're just left to be like, wow, okay then. All right. So I guess I have to like think about that. And that's also, I think, a valuable trick. It's not a trick. It's a valuable thing to do with a book.
It starts off with a bang. Oh, it's just good.
It really does. Yeah. Yeah. I can't believe we didn't call that book club episode What's in the Box. I'm really like, disappointed. I'm retrospective. It's right there. How do we not do that? All right. Anyway, okay. My next, it's sci-fi. I'm going to say it's sci-fi. It is like, there's a lot of growing tendrils of things, which just are not scientifically explained necessarily. But The Archive Undying by Emma Mieko Candon. I have been raving about this book, y'all. It's so good. It's a debut. It is weird. It's messy. It's so compelling. I mean, this world is bananas. Like, it's rare that I feel like somebody knocks me upside the head with their world building the way, like, it happens every now and then, right? Like, you get like a China Mieville or like N.K. Jemisin or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And I feel like Candon has done that with this world. Like, it just feels so, I would never have come up with this. I never. And Sunai, who is our like hot mess of a main character, is like sleeping with the wrong man, like on the run, possibly immortal. Like, what is going on with him? Lots of dark secrets in his past. And this is the first in a series. So there is a resolution, but it is not the resolution. And I think that's also handled extremely well here. Because, you know, mecha stories, like, again, there's lots of mecha stories out there, but what Candon does with it is just truly bananas. It's truly banana pants. I really am obsessed with this book. I don't know what else to tell you. Like, pick it up and read it. It's dark, it's messy, it's twisted, there's a lot of tendrils, but like, it's so worth it. It's so worth it. Oh, it's so good.
I really enjoy it. Pick it up and read it.
I just, you know, just do it. Just do it.
That is excellent. I just realized in you talking that I really do enjoy a mecha story, and that could have very well been like a favorite thing from our favorites and pet peeves episode. And I just didn't think about it. But yeah, adding that to my list, my mental list. Okay, so my second pick, which is definitely fantasy, is one that I have talked about on this show enough times, and I think y'all have also talked about, but it is, The Shadow Cabinet by Juno Dawson, which maybe you've talked more about the first book and the series, Her Majesty's Royal Coven. This was the sequel, and it held up, man. Like, Juno Dawson really loves a throw stuff at the wall cliffhanger, and they're worth it, which is great. But this book, I remember talking to Patricia Elsie Tuttle, who does our Read This Book newsletter and is also on All the Books, about it. And she said, you know that ride California Screamin' at Disney World, or not Disney World, California Adventure? I said, yeah, it's this like just shotgun of a roller coaster. She's like, that's what this book felt like. And yes, that is a description I'm going with. Like, from the jump, you're just like, and go. And it's, you know, witchy covens of besties that like are no longer besties, magical war, high stakes, a prophecy, lots of queer characters, so much swearing. I have said that before, but it's my favorite part about this. It's like English-Irish sweary, which is even better. So, yeah, it's just this book really delivers. It's a trilogy, but the best part is that we're getting that prequel that takes us to Tudor times, because the original witch of the coven is Anne Boleyn, and I don't know how to tell you how excited that makes me. Like, we're going to Tudor England with Judo Dawson. Sign me up twice. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Can't wait to see whatever this finally concludes, but I'm super down for that prequel. And I just love this book to pieces. It's such a middle finger to the phobes, and I love it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Shadow Cabinet. Juno Dawson.
I read the first one because you loved it so much. Like, literally, I was like, well, Vanessa loved this book, so I have to read it. And I got to the end, and I was like, how?
How dare?
Dare you?
I know.
I am never going to get over this, ever. And so I was like, I don't know if I can keep going.
Maybe you should wait. Yeah.
So because upset.
The second one is one where you think literally until the last, I want to say two paragraphs, that you're out of the woods about the cliffhanger. Like where you're like, okay.
Oh my God.
Like, yeah, there's some stuff, but you're like, okay, I can live with this. And then the last two paragraphs, you're like, wait, what? What? And oh, I only will forgive Juno because the books are so good and because we're getting this prequel, but I had to text several people in my life to be like, did that just happen? And yes, yeah, it did. But
I'm going to have to wait till the series
okay.
is done.
That's fine.
I just can't. I am a delicate flower and I just can't do it right now. I can't get, you can't get me that attached to some people and then pull that business.
That's,
however, if you like having your heart ripped out of your chest, like, go for it.
That's excellent. Really.
Babel did it too. I can't throw stones because I keep reading, you know, R.F. Kuang, but like, whatever. to each our own heart ripping.
Yes.
All right. Well, it has been a heavy year, and a lot of these books are pretty heavy. So I was like, I need to pick something that's not heavy. And then I was like, oh, you know how romanticy has like taken over the world? Like, suddenly romanticy, which is a portmanteau of romance fantasy, which I had only ever encountered literally once before. And it was actually a question from one of our year-end SFF Yeah shows. Somebody was looking for romanticy recommendations. I was like, is that what I think it is? And I had to like Google it. Well, now everybody knows about romanticy. It's like the big deal of the year. And I was like, oh, I could pick a, I'd read a bunch of it. Like, I'm here for it. And then I read one just really in the lead up to this by accident that I was like, well, I found it. I found my fourth book. It's Bitter Medicine by Mia Tsai. And this is, we've never talked about it on the show before, so I'm going to go a little bit more into it. This is a contemporary fantasy where a Chinese immortal being and a French elf are like she does work for him.
Great.
In like, she does calligraphy spells. She does calligraphy magic. Yeah, it's so good.
Okay, you can be done
and
now.
And he's one of the customers who comes to the shop to be like, he's an agent for this like paranormal, you know, whatever, enforcer agency. And he has a very dangerous job. So he comes to her to get calligraphy spells to help him do his job. And they are like secretly, not so secretly, in love with each other. But like, both are like, no, I can't. I mustn't. And, you know, you can imagine where it goes from there. Both have big secrets in their past. There's a lot of complicated family stuff. They both have really dark things in their background. But somehow, this book maintains such a sense of like compassion and gentleness and humor about it. It reminds me in that regard of, The Light from Uncommon Stars,
okay, yeah, exactly.
By Rika Aoki, because it's like it's not that bad things haven't happened to them or that like horrible things may be continuing to happen to them, but they have so much, they're such like, you know, that like, well, I guess I'm gonna laugh because otherwise I'm just gonna cry moments in here. And they're so cute together. Oh my gosh, I can't say it. Like, nobody is a toxic anything. Everybody is a cinnamon roll who's just like going through it, and you just want to hug them and like yell at everybody who's making their lives hard. I'm obsessed with this world. It's a debut novel, so like, I can only hope that we will get more this version of... Oh, and it takes place in London, Vanessa.
Dun-dun.
So, I know.
Well, writing that down right now. Okay.
Sold. Like, it's just... It's the heartwarming story that I needed. The action is great. There's family stuff. There's the love. There's the different cultures. And I love, actually, most about this. There's a end note from the author about all of the different cultures and languages that are present and why she included them. That is just like, mwah, chef's kiss. Love it. So I love everything about this book. If you are looking for something a little more heartwarming that still has plenty of action, Bitter Medicine by Mia Tsai will do the thing. It's really, really good. I'm going to be talking about it for a while.
No, like, I might not need to read that like today.
Okay. Oh my gosh. Just put it into your brain. Reading. Just like put it into your brain.
Love coziness, but I definitely still need there to be like stakes. And that is the thing I sometimes run into with romanticism.
Here.
Yeah. So that is going to be great. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be a cheater and just quickly give a shout out to a book that if I'd gotten further into it, I wonder if it would have landed on this list just because I don't feel like a lot of people are talking about it, or maybe not anymore. Maybe they did for a bit. But Immortal Longings by Chloe Gong, I did not realize until about 3 weeks ago, is inspired by Antony and Cleopatra.
Ooh.
And I just, it's like very Hunger Games-y. Like there's these twin cities that have these battles every year that like if you're probably going to die. But like if you don't, then you win a lot of money. And again, there's an Antony and Cleopatra angle in there that I loved Our Violent Delights by Chloe Gong, so I was interested, and I just wish I'd gotten further into it because I really think it could have been here, and I don't feel like a lot of people are mentioning it anymore, and it's just like, I don't know, it's a lot of fun, so I just wanted to sneak that in real quick because I think you should read it, and hopefully
you sold me
it. Yeah. You Antony and Cleopatra, and then some of the characters have like names that are like August instead of August. Like I was like, okay, yes, I see you. I see what you're doing. So, yeah, I'm gonna read that, but I'm definitely gonna maybe put the finishing of that on pause because I really want to read Bitter Medicine now, and that's fine.
It's so good. Okay, all right. Well, that was our best of.
Best
jumping
of plus.
Around best of plus best of with bonus best ofs. Hope you have lots of books to read now. I'm sure you do. You can always tell us what you think about these. SFFYeahBookRiot.com. SFFYeah sound edited by Caitlin Brame. So many thanks to her as always for making us sound great each and every episode. If you need more book recommendations, you can always get those at BookRiot.com. You can find our other podcasts at bookriot.com/listen. Thanks for hanging with us for 167 episodes. What? Again, yes, email us, sffyeahbookriot.com. Pet pictures, book recommendation requests, you know, favorites, theme ideas, whatever. Send it in. You can also review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, really wherever. It helps other people to find the show. Vanessa, where can people find you?
Mostly on Instagram at Buenos Dias SD.
Excellent. I am still on social media breaks, so don't look for me. I'm not there.
Don't find me. Bye.
I will be here, but I am not there.
Love that for you. Truly.
All right. We'll talk to you next time.
Bye.